You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Susan Maples and Lauren Eckert here with a Brave Parent podcast for you to enjoy today. And this particular podcast is a subject or an area near and dear to me. It's oral health. And having spent my career learning and practicing and teaching oral health, I think certainly I could have handled this podcast on my own, you'd think, 45 minutes on my career of learning. But I really wanted to invite one of my closest friends, personally and professionally, Dr. Doug Thompson, who is rocking our world in the professional area of dentistry, in wellness dentistry. He's the founder of the Wellness Dentistry Network. He is a regular researcher and practitioner. He is also a teacher at the highest academy, the highest, most esteemed academy in all of dentistry, the COICE Institute, and leads his own courses there. So everyone in dentistry knows him, although you are parents and don't know that this guy's a famous guy, but he is, and he's my friend. And on the outside, he looks like a really serious professional. On the inside, he's a bit of a little boy. So our goal is going to try to get him to giggle a little bit today because he's pretty delightful.
Not hard.
And Doug and I have known each other for, decades. And we travel in the same circles. We sit on the same board, which is the board of the American Academy for Oral and Systemic Health. And Doug is considered a key opinion leader in the area of wellness dentistry and, just an overall great contributor, very generous with his knowledge. So our goal and say hi, Doug.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you, Susan, for the kind introduction. That's great. I'm excited to be here and excited to share some of our findings and some of the things that we do on a regular basis with our listening audience.
Nice. And keep in mind, Doug, this is for parents, but one of the reasons I asked Doug is because he's very, very accustomed to speaking in plain language and not overwhelming you with names of bugs and interesting, inside scoop on what we've learned in the mouth. But our goal today is to help you as brave parents or great brave grandparents or educators in your own right to help kids avoid the oral diseases that we see plaguing our population. I don't know if you remember this from the book, but Caries disease, the disease of tooth decay, is the number one disease, most prevalent disease in the world, not just in the United States, and certainly the number one disease for children and a big source of aggravation, visits to the emergency department, infection, tears, pain, all of that. So that leads to another disease called endodontic disease, which is when the inside of the tooth dies and leaks out the root and the infection that ensues, sort of ends up all over in the body. The number one most prevalent disease for probably adults in the world is periodontal disease. And it affects 50% of 30-year-olds and 70% of 50-year-olds. So it's incredibly prevalent. And this one doesn't hurt, doesn't end up with tears. The chronic infection level sort of creeps up and you sort of live with it. And we want to help people avoid not only losing teeth from, where the gums sort of melt away the gums unzip and the bone melts away and the teeth get loose and drifty and smell bad and all of that. But we also want to make sure that we're not infiltrating these horrible bugs around these teeth through leaky gums to other parts of the body, which we see in adults every day. So those are the key areas that we're going to focus on today. We could talk about another time about occlusal disease, grinding teeth, about HPV and oropharyngeal cancer and so many other oral diseases, and not only how oral disease affects the body, but how metabolic disease shows up in the mouth, like diabetes and hypertension and heart disease and even airway issues. You know, we've looked at that through another lens on other podcasts. But in general, you know, Doug and I deal with a lot of adults, and Doug's practice is primarily adults. And so, Doug, I'd like you to sort of dig in and tell parents, if let's take Carey's disease and periodontal disease or gingival diseases, gum diseases separately.
I think the Carey's, you know, the whole Carey's disease, and Carey's is just a fancy name for the disease that causes cavities, you know, so we get cavities in teeth. But, you know, one of the interesting things about that disease is it sometimes you have two kids living in the same house, eating the same diet, drinking the same things, and one kid gets cavities and another one doesn't. And oftentimes parents want to chastise or blame it on the kid for why they have that. And it can really create a big issue for children about what they eat, how they feel about what they eat. And they can become very self-conscious of the problem. I have little children that come into the practice and cry because they're afraid that their mom or dad is going to give them a hard time if we diagnose that they have a small cavity. And so I think understanding that this disease, the cavity disease, it's not just a disease of bad habits. It's a disease of susceptibility, meaning that some of us get it and some of us don't. It's just like if you ride on an airplane, you sit next to somebody who's coughing and you're there with a friend and you get the cold and your friend doesn't get the cold. It's because we're susceptible to it. So I just want to give the little kiddos a break that have this disease. It's a really big issue for them. And I see it can cause a lot of problems in families. And even the other siblings can say, oh, Joey's always the one with cavities. And it can really create a big problem. So I want parents to understand it's a disease of susceptibility. And what happens is these little guys and gals have a bug imbalance in their mouth, and the conditions are right for those bugs to grow for some people, and they're not right for them to grow for others. And so what we do, and I'm sure, Susan, as you know, what we do is we do what we call a risk assessment. We try to figure out who's who in the family. And we want to do more for those that need it, and we want to do less for those that don't need it. So that's the idea. So I want to make sure the susceptibility thing's understood. And then the treatment is really, it's really multifactorial, meaning that there's many.
I'm going to stop you really quick and just say, one of the myths in dentistry is that treatment for Carey's disease or for cavities is drilling a hole in a tooth, cleaning the decay out, shoving a man-made product. When Doug talks about treatment, he's not talking about that. That's treatment for the ramifications of the disease, treatment for the hole, not treatment for the disease. So keep going.
Yeah. You know, something else interesting about that, I think I've said clearly, it's a bug imbalance. You know, when you grow up and you get older and these kids get older, if they have the cavity causing bacteria in their system, and let's just say they go on now and they have some cavities even as a young adult, and maybe they have a couple cavities as an adult. If they had a heart attack or a stroke, even young, and they looked at that blood clot that caused the heart attack or a stroke, they'll find some of those cavity causing bacteria in that blood clot. Mm-hmm. So we know these cavity causing bacteria don't just lay around the teeth. I mean, they travel through the system. And this is where we get into the whole idea about how oral conditions can affect overall systemic health. And what you so eloquently said in the beginning of the intro is there's a lot of these different diseases that we could talk about. But today if we're talking about cavities and gum disease, I think those are two excellent topics because those are the two of the hugest things that we deal with. So getting back to treatment, to your point, I'm talking about treatment of the infection, not treatment of the hole in the tooth. Treatment of the hole of the tooth, that's way late. That disease is way late in the game.
We want to find it
when we just even see some discoloration of the tooth, or we see some other signs of imbalance, some stickiness in some of the grooves of the tooth. And that's when your dentist might recommend something like a sealant. It's like putting some caulking and some cracks in your driveway to keep the water out. You know, if we sometimes just eliminate some of the liable areas of the tooth where the little bacteria can get in and stick and hide, and it's hard for them to clean. So treatment, what we used to do is just give our children a tube of toothpaste, a high fluoride toothpaste, or some kind of fluoride product. But today we need to think about the foods we eat. We need to think about the quality of the saliva in our mouth, the way we make saliva, the quality of how we hold our mouth when we sleep. If your children are making any sleeping sounds, Susan, you're much more of an expert on sleeping problems in children than I am. The kinds of foods they take for lunch. You know, when I was a kid, I used to take two peanut butter and jam sandwiches on white bread, and I would have some fruit for dessert. It was called a fruit roll-up, right? That was my fruit.
Oh, Dougie.
That was my fruit for dessert. And I mean, that's loaded up with sugar, right? The peanut butter, the white bread, the jam, and I wouldn't eat one of those sandwiches. I would eat two of those sandwiches, and chances are I'd have a warmed up pizza pocket when I got home at 3 o'clock. So it was really, the diet was ripe for not only the promotion of caries, but for the leaning of my body to not even metabolically process the foods properly. And, you know, so I love what Brave Parent and what the whole platform is doing, is trying to teach people how to eat right and how to sleep right and how to exercise right and how to be right, because all that stuff adds up and it changes the environment of our oral environment. And that can cause a big problem.
We should also just remind you, listeners, from the beginning, if we start from the very beginning, we aren't born with these bugs in our mouth. They're literally transmissible from caregivers to babies through saliva. And so if you're a cariogenic parent, you have a big population of the cavity-causing bugs, and you swap spit with a baby, the window of opportunity that we think about right now in the research is 6 months to 3.5 years. They're then gifted with that bacteria that starts to flourish in the grooves, where Doug says, in the grooves of the teeth. They build a population, they populate the mouth, and you think you like sugar, they like sugar even better. That's their primary source of food. These bugs flourish with a diet that Doug just described. And not only do they flourish, but when they eat the sugar, they produce acid, just like we eat and produce urine. Urine is acidic, right? So we really are looking at a byproduct that leaches calcium out of teeth to buffer the acid. But backing up to that, when Doug's talking about this bug population and a rich diet that supports the bug population, we need to be able to shift that in these kids that are high risk. Have you encountered, Doug, some people that can eat sugar and, of course, metabolically it wrecks their body, but they don't get cavities?
Yes. Yeah, we do have that. We have, obviously, if we have children and young adults and adolescents that don't have the bug population that produces the acid to cause the problem, then some people can eat as much sugar as they want. And then I just tell them the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to maybe not be so happy with your belly, or you're going to have some other kinds
diabetes, of diabetes, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Do we need to go on? Right.
But all that kind of stuff. So, so again, we want to, you know, see, we still want to promote a healthy diet, but I think in the beginning now, when we talk about little Joey, who's one of the family members who gets the cavities, then he for sure has to be careful with what he eats and drinks. And that's where we have to start thinking about really trying to control the exposure to refined sugar, because refined sugar is the worst. I know that fruit has some sugars in it, but I'm not so worried about that part as much as I'm worried about the sugars that come from Snickers bars and hard candies and things like that. Now, we have some good sugar substitutes these days that could still make some of these little treats taste good for us. If we are going to have sweet desserts or something like that, we should really try to have it with our meal, right at the end of our meal. We shouldn't do something where we give our bodies small amounts of sugar all day long, like sodas, where we sip them and things like that. So if we are going to do that, we could do two things. We could have it with our meal and then clear it with water right after we eat the whole thing, or we could have some kind of sugar substitute like xylitol or erythritol or some of these other things. And so I would just say, look for products that are not sweetened with simple sugar, but they also have healthy sugar substitutes. And so xylitol and erythritol would be two things. If they haven't heard that word before, those are two sugar substitutes that would be healthy and that would be acceptable. So if you have somebody in the family who's struggling with cavities, it's not their fault, but we do need to be careful how we feed them and how they sleep and how what they eat and drink. And so so a couple of the sugar substitutes things would be a good idea.
When we say the word sugar, it's kind of a big word that represents everything sort of sweet. But when we talk about sugar substitutes, that just means these are real sugars, actually. They're naturally occurring alcohol-based sugars, come from wood bark, and they're really natural sugars, but they behave differently in the mouth. You know, one of the things that was interesting, Doug, Kim Kush, who is the founder of Carefree, and I just gave a talk at the Collaboration Cures meeting called Dropping Acid. And it was a play on words, but it was really interesting because Kim kind of reminded the audience that, you know, to avoid cavities, we often have focused in dentistry on frequency, as you say, these little bits that feed these bugs all day that keep them producing acid. We've been saying in dentistry, just chug it down. Don't sip it, just chug it down. And I want to say you have to be careful what happens from here down, because we really don't want to be promoting obesity and diabetes and heart disease and all the rest. So I were really more like, how about just leave it in the store? And Doug makes a really good point. The occasional dessert, I don't call it a treat. I call it a cheat. We get cheats, but we can't cheat our bodies all the time because we end up in a disease state. So the idea would be, again, have it with a meal. Do not put those kinds of snacks in between meals. And if we're training the brain to prefer healthier foods, thinking that we're doing a good thing by eating xylitol candy all through the day isn't necessarily great brain training, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you're still eating the candy, and the minute you don't have xylitol, you're grabbing the Jolly Rancher.
And kids don't really understand the difference. You know, they're going to eat what you provide. Right. So I'm a little bit of a proponent of just saying, like, let's find the sugar in the natural fruit that comes with its own antidote, the fiber, and of course the micronutrients that have cell that build cell health for all of your body. You know?
Sure.
I'm curious, just because we do a lot of swaps, for example, with honey as like our sugar substitute. I mean, how does honey play into this specifically?
Yeah, honey's still it's all sugar. It's all sugar. So even if you'll see even cereal say sweetened with honey. It's just another word for sugar. So it's a natural sugar, but the bacteria would be able to use that. So we still want to be careful it's maybe a slightly healthier option than refined sugar from sugar cane or sugar beets, but it's still a sweetener, and it still will fuel the bacteria if you have them. If you don't have them, then a little bit of honey every now and then is not going to be such a big deal. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're managing your, I stopped calling it body weight, even if you're managing just your body architecture, you know, and you're happy with the way you look and you measure your metabolics. So this is a whole nother area of discussion, but we probably should stop thinking about health and unhealth as the way we look. We should start thinking about how do we measure how well our internal engine's functioning and our metabolics. So if you have great metabolics and you're pancreas is producing the right amount of insulin and your insulin receptors are working and your engine's running great, a little bit of honey's great. I mean, it's not going to hurt you. However, if we're running a little sluggish or if we have one of these oral diseases, then fueling ourselves with any kind of sugar is going to be detrimental. There's a nice book written. It's a real simple read. It was written by James Sorrell. He was a colorectal surgeon, and he wrote a book called SOS. And SOS stands for Stop Only Sugar. And he just said, if you want to make one health choice that will have dramatic lasting impacts on your life, just stop sugar. Mm-hmm. And so we know that most of us don't stop it, but could we be aware of it? And could we really cut it down? That part's easy. Because when you think about how many teaspoons of sugar, by the way, when you read a food label and it says four and it says grams of sugar in a small can of Coca-Cola, there might be 40 grams of sugar. Well, 1 teaspoon of sugar is 4 grams. So if it's 40, that's 10 teaspoons of sugar that's in that can of Coke. So when you go to the store and you read the food label and it says 24 grams of sugar, just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. When I put 6 teaspoons of sugar in this little tiny chocolate bar and then eat it, probably not such a good idea.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the World Health Organization and the American Heart Association issued a warning that we as Americans need to cut our sugar consumption by 75% to get to what they recommend, which is we want 5% of our caloric intake in sugar and no more. And that represents for an adult with an average of 2000 calorie a day diet, it represents 2/3 of 1 Coke for the whole day. What's the problem is the hidden sugars. So you could say, well, I had my 2/3 a can of Coke, but you also aren't looking at what's in the crackers you just ate or the ketchup with your fries or the yogurt that you had for breakfast. And so it's the hidden sugars that parents aren't paying attention to. And when we look at the tragedy of kids that end up really bound with, you know, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease affecting 24% of our kids, and these kids get really sick because the detection is difficult. By the time they're, you know, they detect it, the parents feel terrible because did Doug's mom think that she was giving him a terrible lunch to eat? No, it's pretty typical American diet. She wouldn't have counted the sugar in the peanut butter, because you probably were eating something like Jif, not natural peanut butter,
for sure.
In the jam, in the white bread. And by the way, flour acts as a substrate. You know, anytime you knock off the outside of a grain and grind it into a powder and eat it, it acts as a substrate for the carcinogenic, the bacteria in your mouth to produce cavities, as well as your body's metabolic health. So that, and even the pizza pocket, I'm going to say, had sugar in the tomato sauce. And so, you know, we sneak these, you know. So let's talk about what snacks do you recommend, Doug, for kids?
Well, we want, I think we say it even wrong in our society. We talk about how eating, you know, healthy fruits and vegetables. I would say it really should be, we should eat vegetables, and maybe a little bit of fruit. So you know, I like to switch that around. So, I mean, I love carrot sticks. I love celery sticks. I love any kind of vegetable that a kid would eat. And if you wanted to have, if you needed to have some kind of thing on it, you can get some, either some fat-free or some sugar-free ranches or some dressings or some little things to put on the vegetables to make it, you know, really palatable. But then, you know, you see the kids, you got to be careful because you'll see the kids use the carrot as a pickup tool for whatever ranch dressing, and they just lick the carrot, right? They don't eat it.
But how about like guacamole or hummus or peanut butter or almond butter that's natural? Those are good pickup devices for some healthy food, right?
Yeah, anything that you can. And I think introducing your child to those kinds of foods, the earlier the better, as long as it's appropriate for their digestive health. I think it's great because many kids, you know, I grew up, Susan, in very humble beginnings, and we didn't have fresh fruit. You know, we had a lot of frozen things. We had convenience foods. We had a lot of convenience foods. And so having a variety of fresh fruits and vegetables was a little bit foreign to me. Oh, we ate corn, but it came out of a can. You know, we ate beans, but it came out of a can. And so these are really, it was really a luxury to have fresh fruit and fresh vegetables. And let me tell you, that stuff's expensive today. So we need to figure out what our children, we need to introduce them to that stuff as early as we can. And then anything they like that's not laden with sugar. And again, you know about shopping in the grocery store, you know, get into the produce section and try to find some things they like, but be creative. You know, you can
cut out. I really like for parents, the bigger stores like Sam's Club or Costco, because now a lot of parents will say, I can't buy vegetables in that quantity because it goes to waste. But if you can get your kid's palate accustomed to, you know, roasted vegetables that are stored in the refrigerator for snacks or steamed green beans that are you know, a little bit of garlic salt or something, and you're putting them in bags so they can grab them, you'll find you'll go through all that. It's a matter of trying to build an appetite for it, a preference for it. And as we've talked about many times, neuroplasticity, our brains are at any age, are reprogrammable. We're eager to, we're not always eager to make changes, but once we force ourselves to make changes, the brain will follow up. It'll catch up and it'll start to build preferences around what we feed our children. What snacks do you provide, Lauren, for your kids?
Thankfully my 4-year-old specifically, one of his favorite foods is broccoli. So he likes broccoli in any form, which I'm grateful for. My now 7-year-old, he just turned 7 yesterday. He is harder. He's very picky. Chickpeas has been like the biggest savior there. He loves chickpeas. So that's good. And tomatoes. Tomatoes are his thing. He will eat gallons of tomatoes. So I'm grateful for that at least. But my 4-year-old will eat anything, celery sticks, carrot sticks, all by themselves. Just have to be a little.
Are you practicing the polite bite where your 7-year-old also has to taste all of these foods?
Continue. All the time. Yes. No matter what, I always put a green on his plate for dinner, for lunch, and I have him try it. So, and he knows that's just part of the drill. So he will try it.
I promise you.
Yeah. I figure in time.
let's shift, since we're, you know, time is flying. Let's shift toward periodontal disease and periodontal pathogens and the transmissibility of those. And really, how can we, we want to include oral hygiene, but we don't want to just rely on oral hygiene as the ticket. As you and I know, it goes beyond brushing and flossing, but those are certainly super important. Tell us a little bit about how we can avoid gum disease, which is so prevalent in the patients that you and I see every day.
Yeah, and gum disease is a real similar thing. But before we get on to gum disease, I just want to close one little loophole about cavities and the disease that causes cavities called caries. I want to make sure that our listening audience knows that there's many different steps you can take to help ward off that disease, which obviously we talked about the diet, but you also should know there's products that we can help harden the teeth, which make the teeth more resistant to the bacteria. We can attack the bacteria. We have rinses and we have different things that we can use to attack the bacteria. And then we have other additives that we can put in rinses that change the acidity level of the mouth. So there's really now a multifactorial approach, and there's many things we can do. So if you have a child that's having a cavity, it's not hopeless, but you need to get them to a dentist who will take a wider approach than just giving you a tube of toothpaste.
Let's talk about the two major influencers in terms of hardening teeth.
Yeah, probably the biggest one is topically applied fluoride, not fluoride you drink, but topically applied fluoride would be very good. We also have paint on surface changers that takes away the grooves. Those are called sealants. We can do that type of thing. And then there's other pastes that have a big fancy word, nanohydroxyapatite, that it basically has components of the crystalline structure that the teeth are made up of. And you know, the enamel is the hardest part of your body. It's the hardest substance in your body. So how crazy is it that a little bug that you can't see except for through a microscope can get on the body, make acid, and create a hole in your tooth? So we don't want that to happen. And most of us dentists that are aware of this, we can do a beautiful assessment for those children and we can figure out who's at risk. That's the idea.
The interesting part about these little mini particles of tooth structure called nanohydroxyapatite is that you'd think that you could just put them around the teeth and maybe they'd go back into the structure. But you have to remember that they came out of the structure because the pH or acid level was ripe for it. And so unless you change the pH or acid level, meaning the sugar feeding the bacteria, producing the acid, and the acidic drinks and foods that we eat, the lack of saliva, all of those things that cause the acid level, those little nanoparticles those little tiny particles of tooth crystals will not go back into the teeth. So it's not just about providing it. It's about really shifting. That's why Doug's suggesting you find a dentist who takes a look at this from a scientific approach, not just, let's get him scheduled and get those cavities filled in. Boop, you should stay away from sugar, young man, as he started out the conversation saying, it's not necessarily his fault. And of course, parents can help by leaving the sugar in the store, including breakfast cereals, including cakes and cookies and crackers, and, you know, occasionally having, you know, a birthday cheat, a dessert cheat, but really training the brain to get along with less sugar.
How early are you able to tell, I mean, in children then, like those that are more prone or at risk to the disease? Is it infant or is it usually a little older?
No, it can start with the first, as soon as the enamel starts to pop into the mouth, it's at risk. So one of the things, Lauren, that we would look at is, if you ever forgot to brush your teeth one night and you woke up the next morning, your teeth feel a little fuzzy, you know, that fuzzy feeling on the teeth, that we used to call that plaque, that would just be growing on the teeth. And that's an accumulation of bacteria that grow on the teeth very rapidly. Today we know that as we call it biofilm. It's a little bit more sophisticated because it's not just made up of bacteria, but it's also made up of yeast and viruses. So one of the early warning signs that somebody might be making themselves more vulnerable to that would be if they're just a bad brusher. I mean, if they just don't take the bacteria, or they don't take the biofilm off the teeth mechanically. We do that with a toothbrush. We could do it with a terry cloth towel. We could do it with anything that would scrub the surface of the teeth without damaging the gums or the tooth structure. You can get it off many different ways. But if you leave that stuff on the teeth, now the condition is better or more likely that you might get one of these problems. So other than that, we do have some pretty sophisticated ways to measure the activity of the biofilm, but it's not so widely known and it's not so widely predictable that just because you have some abundant biofilm on the teeth that you're going to get this cavity. So unfortunately for a lot of us, we either see it on a radiograph, which the layman's term for a radiograph is an x-ray. Mm-hmm. We would see it either on an x-ray as a small black spot, or we would see it visually with our eyes, or we would use our tactile touch. We have little tiny instruments that we can push in the surface of the tooth. And if the tooth feels sticky or it doesn't feel hard like a driveway surface, then we know that something's going on with that. It could be scratchy. It could be starting to turn color. So it's visual, it's tactile. It's also looking at the environment where these teeth are coming in and just answering the question, does this look like a safe space? Right. And so that's the idea. Now, those bacteria that cause gum, that cause cavities, that's one little gang in your mouth that you don't want. But there's another little gang that's lurking in there too. And that's a gang of bugs that cause what we call gum disease. Mm-hmm. And gum disease in your kiddos, gum disease will look like, it'll be like a bright red band around the gums of your teeth. If you take the lip and pull the lip down and you look at the lower teeth and you see bright red, almost like it wants to bleed. Or if you ever see pink on your toothbrush, or if you ever spit out blood, or when you're flossing, if you see pink, then we know that the gums are inflamed. And we have a fancy term for that. Those gums are called gingiva. That's the scientific term for what your gum is. I just call it gum disease. But the gingiva, the fancy name for it is gingivitis, any kind of itis. You know, if you have an itis, arthritis, whatever the itis is, that means inflammation. So we have this gingivitis starts and we get inflammation. And what happens, Lauren and Susan, when you have inflammation around the teeth, the gum tissue gets kind of weepy. It gets like more fluid in it. It gets weepy and it becomes a great food source for the bacteria. So the inflammation around your teeth drives the buildup of more bugs. And what starts to happen is the character of the gang changes and it starts to get meaner. It starts to get meaner and meaner over time. in some of these cases go on to cause what we call periodontitis, where it actually eats the bone away. And I think Susan used the term unzipping the gums and then melting the bone away around the teeth. And this is people, Lauren, as they get to be more in adulthood, the teeth get longer. They start to get gum recession and the teeth start to get longer.
They don't grow. They just look longer to you. More of it's revealed to your sight.
Yeah. Or they flare, or they move, or the breath is bad, or there's
they're catching food between their teeth because now they have a gap where they didn't. Those are kinds of signs.
So
interesting.
So
what Doug says, the bugs get meaner. If you can picture the bugs in your garden, it's literally, if you were looking at them under a microscope, it's not like the same bugs behave differently. You just grow different bugs, bugs that live without oxygen, bugs that are more invasive, bugs that are more, that once they get in the bloodstream, they're more aggressive at traveling through cell walls and collecting in organs we don't want. So it's a collection of bugs. I always say to patients, sort of like, if you turn down a dark alley where it's so dark and scary that the police don't even go there, who ends up there? More bad guys. Yeah. So if we avoid those areas and they're not cleanable, which they and often in these deeper crevices around the teeth aren't cleanable, the bug population gets way worse. And then we have a real problem.
Right. So what we're talking about is we use the term gingivitis. That's the inflammation of the gum gingiva. When it turns really mean, like the people in the big dark back alley, then it's called periodontitis. And here's what I would say for our children population. If we just look in their mouth and we look at the gum health and we help them brush their teeth and we teach them how to brush these bugs off the teeth, many of the children will do very, very well. And the gingivitis will stay confined to the gum tissue. And the gingivitis they can even brush it away or they could almost rinse it away. However, for some people, and not all people, but for some people, the gingivitis can turn into the periodontitis. So the best time to intercept this disease is when we have red gums. And that's what we're going to see mainly in our children and in our young adult population. We're going to have a chance to ward this disease off when they're very young, but we have to identify the gingivitis first. Now, what Susan and I have in our practice are some periodontal therapists. We call them dental hygienists, and the dental hygienists who are cleaning the teeth have to be very aware of the inflammation level of your child or of the children, and they need to give you honest feedback, and they need to not make the child feel guilty because they're a bad brusher. We have to find the kind of brush the child will use. We want to make it fun. I don't care if it sings, blinks at you, whatever it does, they need to have something that's fun that they'll go in the bathroom and they'll use. I have three little grandkiddos, three little granddaughters, and these kids just recently got a toothbrush that they put the whole thing in their mouth and they close their teeth around it and it scrubs all the teeth at the same time. Now, it wasn't an inexpensive apparatus, but they're brushing their teeth now like they want to brush their teeth 10 times a day, where before you would get maybe 40 seconds, you know, with a toothbrush, and it would be a struggle. So we have to find something that they like to get these bacteria off the teeth so this gingivitis doesn't continue to grow and fester and become what we call periodontitis. And periodontitis doesn't usually affect children much, but it surely starts in your 20s. And for some even earlier, there's some unique kinds that could start even in your teens. So we have to have, again, just like we do a cavity assessment, we have to have a gum disease assessment. We have to make sure we're managing both of these populations of dangerous bugs.
And Doug brings up a really good point that you can clean your teeth with a number of different things, a terry cloth towel, a really cool expensive gizmo that goes on your teeth at the same time, but you need to learn how to use everything. That skill building piece happens in childhood and doesn't change a lot. When kids are little and you're helping brush their teeth and then all of a sudden they're growing up and no one's really worked with them on the dexterity to be able to clean the other half of their teeth, which is the, so if I look at a tooth and it's sort of an oval, a square oval, if I put that extracted tooth in your hand, you probably couldn't even tell me which two surfaces get cleaned with the toothbrush and which two surfaces get scraped with the floss. the same action all the way around the tooth is necessary. We have lots of different ways we can do it. We know power brushes are more effective, but we also want kids to know how to use a hand brush. We know that string floss works, but kids don't often have the dexterity. So we start them with little floss picks, and many adults prefer the floss picks, but it isn't like we call them plunkers where you can just plunk, plunk, plunk. You actually have to curve it around the tooth and sneak up under the gum line into that little space there, and then move it the other way and make that C shape go up under the gum line. So these skill building visits, I'm hoping that your dental office is making some investment in children learning techniques, not just teaching on a model and showing them, but literally having their hands on the instruments while they're watching them. And if they're not, you can do that.
I have to give a shout out to you and what you've done in your Holt office with your learning labs, your hands-on learning labs, because nobody knows better than you and nobody's done that better than you as far as developing projects for kids to maintain their interest, to help them build skills that are lifelong skills that will help them be healthier. And so I also want to mention to parents that, you know, University of Michigan did a study a long time ago about exercise. And the number one reason why children exercise is because they watch their parents exercise. So this is where we need our parents to step up, and our parents need to be in the bathroom doing that stuff. If you sit on the couch and fall asleep with a bag of chips and you don't brush your teeth before you go to bed, that's going to be the same thing little Johnny's going to want to do. So we really need to make sure that we're coaching and we're demonstrating good habits for the kids ourselves, because I see a lot of, we struggle with this in the parent population. So it's really important to model that behavior, and it's really important to create opportunities to let the children show proficiency at what they're doing so they can keep these bugs off the teeth.
It's also really good for them to know if they're showing some signs of beginning cavities, because baby teeth have very thin enamel. It doesn't take long for a cavity to form. It takes only about 6 weeks for a decalcification to occur with some missed brushing opportunities and some sugar, but they can progress pretty quickly. And I'll tell you a really cute story. My son, for those of you who've read the book, you know, my mom was a psychologist. And so she was always very concerned about psychological health. And when my son spent the night at her house one night, Hunter had already had two little cavities between the teeth. And I tell you that, knowing that I was a bit of a sugar warrior, it was surprising to me that Hunter had a couple little cavities. Now I can tell you he's 29. Those mistakes went to the tooth fairy. He has no fillings in his whole mouth, almost 29. So, but anyway, he got very serious about oral hygiene when he had a couple cavities, and he was at my mom's house spending the night, and he's going to bed. And he said, "Grandma," he was probably five, "aren't you going to floss my teeth?" And she said, "Floss your teeth." And he goes, "I can tell you don't want to." He said, "I'll tell you what, if you could just do the beginning cavities and the tight contacts, that would be helpful. I'll show you where they are." And my mom was like, "Your mother is making you paranoid." And I'm like, "Mom, he doesn't want to sit in the chair and have his teeth drilled again. He knows what foods cause cavities. You know, he avoids those, and he wants his teeth flossed, and he can't do it himself." These are before the days where we even had little floss holders. So I just think it's so great that I know what kids are capable of. I know they're capable of knowing where they need to, especially where the teeth are kissing or touching each other. Anyway, those skills, as Doug is saying, those skill building early helps prevent a lifetime of oral disease. We typically see people, not 100%, because you could have somebody cleaning their teeth really, really well, and they might be a smoker and have significant bone loss or whatever. But we typically see people who clean their mouth well avoid gum disease. Of course, those are often people who treat their body well also. So hard to separate those two, don't you think, Doug, those variables?
For sure. It's absolutely correct. You know, you said something that really gives me a lot of hope. You said that Hunter's mistakes went to the tooth fairy. Somebody told me there was no tooth fairy, but I know there is now, right?
So what?
You just confirmed for me there's the tooth
fairy. Are you serious? That's why I say pediatric dentists have it easy, because all their mistakes go to the tooth fairy, where you and I live with them.
Right? We do. By the way, I saw this really cool thing. I don't have a reference for it, but I saw this really cool thing, and people could go online and get it. But it was a little, the tooth fairy that came in my house required that the tooth be put under the pillow. And so now there's this little thing that you hang on the doorknob, and you got the tooth in it. And so the tooth fairy can just leave whatever the tooth fairy wants to leave on the outside. So I want to make sure everybody knows we need to make the house as amenable to the tooth fairy as we can. Don't lock the tooth fairy out.
You know what I learned from a little kid, a fifth grader, who learned it in school, and I found it so fascinating. And I tell everybody, the entire body is covered with ectoderm, right? We have ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. And the ectoderm is the hair, the eyelashes, the cornea of the eyes, the teeth, the nails, everything that's on the outside of your body. And the only part of the ectoderm that does not repair itself under insult is the teeth. So if you can imagine, you scratch the cornea of your eye, or you have a bad haircut, or you lose a fingernail, it all grows back. You cut your skin, and teeth don't. And for a long time, I wondered why that was. But then when we look back to our ancestors as recently as 200 to 300 years ago, they did not suffer from cavity disease or gum disease. They did not have the same level of oral disease that we do. This is because really God made the teeth to last, not to become marred like that. So other than an accident, like getting bashed in the mouth with a spear or something, they really didn't lose their teeth from these diseases. So they're so rampant today, but they're indicative of our lifestyle related problems. And I do think that we could turn it around, but we have a big turnaround to do, to look at our diet, our sleep, our exercise, what we're drinking and eat, all of that, right?
For sure. For sure.
Doug, you address all of that in your periodontal patients.
We do. We know that it's not just the bugs that cause the problem. They initiate the problem, but it's really how we respond to the bugs that makes a difference. And that's made up of our genes, our genetics, because some people are just hardwired to have a bigger reaction to a bug, just like somebody who gets the cavity. It's our genes, but then it's our environment. And probably two of the biggest things in our environment that affect the growth of gum disease bacteria is going to be smoking and probably uncontrolled diabetes, or these people who are flirting with insulin resistance and, you know, early diabetes. And we know, you know, the population, or you know, the demographics on how many people are going to go on to type 2 diabetes. But we really do need to be ambassadors for some increased awareness and some solutions for how we can eat better and sleep better. And we're constantly working on that. And this is the idea of wellness dentistry. When I have people sitting in my dental chair, they expect me to know how to take care of their cavities and how to help them avoid cavities and how to help them avoid periodontal disease. But I surprise them when sometimes I help them with hydration or exercise or identifying insulin resistance, or even looking at mold in their house or pollutants that they might have in their body, or heavy metal toxicity or yeast issues, chronic sinusitis. And as part of the training that we can do for hygienists and dentists, we can create awareness about, we have 23 different other diseases and disease modules that we look at when we're evaluating a patient to see not only do they have those things and could we help them prevent or identify them earlier, get help, but because those things have a bi-directional relationship with the conditions in the mouth. And if you have a smoking habit, or you have blood sugar problems, or you don't exercise, or you're dehydrated, it's going to make my job harder trying to control that bacteria in the mouth, because there's this
really try to put people in an ideal state of healing when we go to work to do our work. And part of that is just laying the groundwork. So stop partying like a rock star, get good sleep, get good hydration. We're trying to maybe de-medicate for some of the things that we're able to help control without medication, so we can get saliva back. I mean, these are really tricky issues, very complicated. This is not an ordinary dentist you're talking to, Doug. Those of us who practice what I call total health dentistry, he calls wellness dentistry, we're few and far between, but we're really hoping that we will see a shift in our profession in our lifetime. We see it slowly. It's not as lucrative to take the time you need. We don't get paid to counsel patients. So in a culture where efficiency and profitability in healthcare is taking the front seat, those of us who are helping patients hold the container for everything going on in their life, we have to kind of slow down, ask questions, engage the patient, work on behavior change. So it's worth it to find someone like that in your community, or maybe within an hour or two drive, it would be worth it for you to seek someone out like that, that would take a good look at not just treating the disease and profiting from the restorative solution, restore the teeth or scrape the teeth to try to, scraping teeth to solve gum disease. If that's all we did in our office, I'm telling you, might as well stay home and stick a fork in your eye, because you're not going to solve the problem. I mean, I'm going to be that abject to say you are not going to get there. Now, if it was a teenager stumbling into gum disease and didn't have a lot of those bad bugs yet, and they hadn't been caring for the teeth, and you were able to work with them on behavior modification and scrape teeth, you might be able to see a turnaround. But most of the time we get on what I call the perigo-round. Once you've been diagnosed with periodontal disease, you always have it. You get these little flares and your hygienist is like, time to treat that again. And it's again, and it's again, and it's again. And I disagree with the American Academy of Periodontics, and so does Doug, that we can't solve this problem. We can solve it. We just have to look at more variables and involve the patient in changing some of those variables to get to a place of stability. Would you agree with that?
I would 100%. I mean, we have people I have now, because I'm a little bit clinically research-based, I like to just make clinical observations for my patient population, but we have people now that we treated one time 13 years ago, and I measure their bacteria profile every year. And they never have the bacterial load they had when we started treatment. But we've really changed the paradigm in what it takes to move that biofilm to a place of health, and we've changed the paradigm in how long it takes to get them to a place of health. And that's why we created the Wellness Dentistry Network. It's just a network of dentists that at least understand the language and have an interest in helping people. Just like our members of the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health. These are dentists that at least have been exposed to the concept that there's so much more we can do for our patient population. And why it works for us in practice is because we have FaceTime. You come and see us regularly. For those of you that have a good dental relationship, most people show up pretty regularly, either three times a year or twice a year for sure. And that's a gift. That's a gift for us. And so we have a big responsibility to those folks to help them be as healthy as they can be. And we usually have 45 minutes to an hour with them. So it's a nice opportunity.
Then looking for dentists that do exactly what you guys do, what are the questions that we need to be asking, or what do we need to be searching for?
It's a great question, Lauren. And I think, people that belong to these study organizations like the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health, they have a member directory. Our Wellness Dentistry Network has a member directory.
Total Health Academy has a member
directory. Yeah, Total Health Academy. Your academy has a member directory. That's Susan's form of kind of the Wellness Dentistry Network, is her Total Health Academy. These are dentists who have spent a considerable amount of time trying to go to the extra place or the extra mile to learn this stuff. And so I think those are great resources.
We have fellows who've accomplished a good amount of education on the website of the American Academy of Oral and Systemic Health. That would be a good place to start in terms of credibility, but questions to ask, I think we all ought to be able to ask better questions of our regular dentist, just to say, tell me more about my host risk factors. Tell me more about why I'm seeming to be at risk here. What do you know about this disease that I don't know? And if they can't provide anything for you, you're in the wrong place. Yeah. You know, sometimes we're just barking up the wrong tree. We and, both believe, Doug and I, that when you surround yourself with really good team of medical and dental experts, your life changes. It's not just about how long you live. It's about making your health span equal your lifespan. And the providers or the professionals that we consult make a big difference in that health span.
No question about it. And I think in today with our, I know that not everybody can afford to get on an airplane and go someplace, but today these resources are available. We try to help find them in your community. That's what we'd like to do because we want to make it as easy as possible. But just so you have some idea of what's happening, I'm in Detroit, Michigan. I had a physician in Massachusetts refer me a patient from Belgium. So I had somebody fly from Belgium. Now you pass a lot of dental offices when you come from Belgium to Detroit. So it's a, so the idea is that what Susan and I are trying to do is we're trying to help educate. And I love this podcast. You're educating the population and the consumers, but we're helping educate dentists as well. So that our practices are worth traveling a distance for. Because you know what? We don't want to drill on your teeth. I would much prefer to get paid for preventing disease than for having to manage the ramifications of disease.
I saw yesterday a family, Doug, that drives 4 hours from Petoskey because they were cavity-prone kids and they kept getting more and more cavities and the parents are like, no idea. So thank you so much. You are a blessing to me in every way. And I'm super... excited about that. I was super excited for this particular podcast. And as I said, I could handle it by myself, but Doug knows I'm always begging to speak with him because I think together we make a good team and we're excited about the future of dentistry and hoping that you have great oral health for your family. And that, you know, I'm certainly here for you to answer whatever questions come up from this podcast and Doug, you are just a blessing to our profession. And Lauren, thank you for hosting.
Thanks for having me, Lauren. Thank you. Nice meeting you and talking with you, and good luck to your kiddos.
This was very informative. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye guys. Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you choose to buy your books. Bye for now.